Let's read again in the Gospel according to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, verse 13. Enter you in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leads unto life, and few there be that find it. Children and young people, I'm sure that you've sat in a classroom or a lecture hall before, and you've maybe gone to the class with high expectations. You're sort of motivated, you're energized, you want to learn. And yet within about 5 minutes of the lesson or lecture beginning, you're confused. You're not picking up what's being taught. Maybe the words are coming too fast, or the words are too big, or the sentences are too long, or it's illogical, it's disjointed and disconnected. Maybe you've felt that in church sometimes. I certainly have at times. I remember that often growing up. And if you're anything like me, you kind of get so frustrated and annoyed, and you blame the confusion on the teacher. And in these cases, you're justified. And you think to yourself, if that teacher really loved me, he or she would have worked much harder to make things clearer and simpler. And so you trace the frustration and the confusion to a lack of compassion, a lack of love in the teacher's heart. Well, you could never, ever accuse Jesus of a lack of clarity, of being confusing. And I hope to show you that tonight, and I want to try and show you that just as you trace confusion to a lack of compassion, we trace the clarity in Jesus' teaching to his compassionate heart. And it's important to make that connection, because today, for many people, the greatest mark or sign or evidence of compassion is to blur. It's to leave people in a bit of a fog when it comes to spiritual things. Not to be as clear as possible. To leave people uncertain as to their state and destination. That's not what Jesus ever did. And that's not compassion either. The most compassionate preacher was Jesus Christ, and he was the clearest, simplest teacher and preacher that there ever was. Though he was teaching about the most complex and profound matters in the universe. I want to show you that this evening from these verses. I want you to see, first of all, two gates. Then, I want to look at two ways, then two travelers, then two destinations. It's really quite straightforward, isn't it? Let's see how clearly Jesus distinguishes in each of these four areas. First of all, notice two gates that he speaks of. Verse 13, enter in at the straight or the narrowed gate. That's one gate. And then he speaks of a second gate, for wide is the gate. So here are the two gates. There's a narrow one, and there's a broad one. Maybe the broad one's the easiest one to deal with. Let's think of that first of all. What's he speaking of when he's speaking of this broad gate? Well, what Jesus is speaking of there is the decision to remain unconverted. The decision, the choice to remain an unbeliever. The decision, the choice to remain as you were born in this world, in a natural, in a sinful state with an unbelieving heart. And I call that, as the Bible calls it, a choice. It's a gate. It's, you don't speak of a gate without speaking of you go in or out. And here people who have gone in, as we'll see, they've gone in through this broad gate. They're on the other side of this broad gate. And this broad gate, therefore, is a decision to remain, to continue as they were born, as they are, as we'll see, the vast majority of people are in this world. And I want you to feel the weight of this. You have decided. If you're going through the broad gate, if you're on this side of the divide, it's a choice. It's a decision. It's a volition that you have made and are making. And it doesn't feel like that to you, and that's because the gate is so broad and it's so easy to get into that you don't actually feel as if you've gone through a gate, as if you've made a decision. It just feels like normal, like natural. It's easy to find and it's easy to go through, and therefore it hardly feels as if you've gone through it and you are going through it at all. But you are. And therefore, if you're an unbeliever here tonight, really Jesus is asking you, he's demanding of you to take that responsibility seriously. We're going to see that there's a decision, there's a choice also, but the narrow gate, but that does not mean there's no choice and no decision about the broad gate, quite the reverse. So say that to yourself. I am choosing the broad gate. I am deciding to stay in the condition in which I was born. I have willed myself, and am willing myself, to remain an unbeliever. It's a choice. It's a decision. It's a responsibility that you take upon yourself, especially every time you hear the gospel. But notice also, secondly, the narrow gate. Enter in at the narrow gate. And it's emphasized again in verse 14. Straight or narrow is the gate. He's really emphasizing here, just get this clear, it's narrow. It's very unlike the broad gate. This is difficult to find and it's difficult to get through. And if you had been living in these days, you would have clicked as to what he was talking about here. In the cities of that day, there were a number of gates through which you entered into the city, and they were opened at daylight, and various traders and travelers would come through unimpeded. But at night time, the dangerous time in these cultures when enemies would attack, then all the gates were closed, and you couldn't get in. It was defensive. But there was a small gate that only the people who lived in the city knew about, that they could take advantage of if they happened to be shut out of the city accidentally. Say they'd gone on a journey, they'd mistimed their journey, or they'd met an accident along the way, they got to their own home city late at night, and the gates are closed. You stay outside in these days, it's not just people, there are animals, you're in great danger. And so they designed it so that the population of that city knew where there was another gate, a very little one, that only one person could get through. So they're not going to open big doors, and then, of course, all the enemies can come in at the one time. But it's just a little tiny gate that was often hidden, unseen, unknown, only to the population, and you could only get one person through. They'd just open it quickly, scoot through, close it again. You'd have to leave all your stuff outside. But really, it was survival. That was all it was about at that point. As long as I can get in. It really doesn't matter about anything I bought or sold or anything I brought with me. I just need in the city. And this is the kind of gate that Jesus is speaking of here. It's difficult to find. And it's difficult to get through. Because you have to leave so much behind. But if you're really desperate, if you really feel your danger, and if you really sense in there is the only place of safety, it really doesn't matter to you how much you have to leave behind, how difficult it is to find or how difficult it is to squeeze through. Because you want life. You want safety. What's a few camels or a few sacks of merchandise if I can get my life? And so they go knock on this door. It's quickly opened by the night watchman. They scoot in and it's closed again. Wow, safety. This is what Jesus is speaking of here. He's portraying biblical conversion, salvation, as this door illustrated. It's difficult to find and it's difficult to enter. Why is it so narrow? Why is it so difficult to find? Why is it so difficult to get in? Well, there are a number of reasons. In some cases, it's maybe intellectual difficulties. People say, well, you know, I can't understand this about the Bible, or I can't understand this about salvation. This is not consistent with this, and I can't square this with science. And so people let their intellectual problems or challenges keep them from looking for the door or entering the door because they're not prepared to put aside these intellectual challenges, and they're not prepared to listen maybe to the Christian answers to them. And so they don't find the door or they don't go through the door. They're not prepared to leave these things outside for the sake of their lives. And really, what this comes down to is they don't need salvation enough. You need salvation enough. No intellectual difficulty is going to keep you from faith. Or maybe it's ignorance. And that's true, I think, in a lot of our culture today. People just don't know where the gate is. They don't even know there is a gate. They don't know that there's such a thing as true conversion and true salvation. And maybe they've seen many counterfeit claims to conversion and new birth, and they're just very cynical about it as well. Or maybe it's sin. It's moral. They've got baggage, habits, practices, desires, pleasures that are just too precious, too valuable, too enjoyable to give up. And they know the gate, they see the gate, they've heard about the gate, they know what the gate requires, but they won't leave sin outside. They want to come in with sin, and you can't do that. True biblical conversion means you turn back, you turn away from the sins and the pleasures of this world that have so ensnared you. You're so desperate to be saved that you say, I don't care how much pleasure, so-called, I lose, if I can get in and if I can get life. But few find it because few are prepared. Many, many, many try and get in that gate with their sins, and it cannot be done. It cannot be done. And, you know, there's laziness as well. This takes effort. This takes focus. This takes prioritizing. This isn't, you don't get in this gate half-heartedly. You can imagine the traveler who comes to the city at night, and oh yeah, there's a gate somewhere, and they just kind of wander around, and they're sort of looking around half-heartedly. they find it or not, it's no big deal. Maybe it would be good to find it, but and they, or maybe they find it and they kind of look at it and, oh, that's a nice door. And then they might even go up and, you know, clear the dust off it and have a good look at it. And they might even just give it a wee nonchalant chat. A wee not just, nobody hears and, oh well, we tried. And there's sort of just a, there's lack of intensity and focus and desire. That's why so few enter in as well. It's just laziness and lethargy, half-heartedness. That's why he says here it's a narrow gate. There are only two. Only two. There's the broad and there's the narrow. Let's look secondly at the two roads. So on the other side of this, these two gates, there are two pathways, two roads. We read about them here. Again, wide is the gate and broad is the way. So you've got a broad gate and you've got a really broad road after it. And then verse 14, narrow, straight is the gate and narrow is the way. So two very different gates, two very different roads on the other side of these gates. So you've got this broad gate that leads into a broad way. And there are signs on this road, but they're very unusual signs for a road because really, basically it says no rules, no laws, no morals, freedom, do whatever you like. Worship, if you like, yeah, worship as many gods as you like. Worship in whatever way you like. Talk about God, whatever way you like, complimentary or cursing, swearing, bad language, anything goes. We don't have any authorities here. There's no one above you. It's everyone does what's right in his own eyes. If it feels good, follow it. Parents and other authorities, we don't give any attention to. There's no special days here. We give you all 7 days a week to use as you see fit. Do whatever you like with them. We don't really have any laws about killing even. You know, the unborn children, you can kill them. And as in Ireland yesterday, you can even celebrate the passing of abortion laws with tens of thousands of people cheering in the streets. We have no laws about sex. You just whatever, whenever, whoever, wherever. And lies, well, what are they? Who tells us what's truth or false anyway? Really, it depends where you are, who you are. Anything, whatever, greed, get as much money as you want, however you want to get it, just trample over people. No laws. That's why it's so broad, so wide. No restrictions. Freedom. I mean, there's a ton of carnage. There are carcasses everywhere, as you would expect on roads with no laws. There's a ton of damage. And no matter how much the stats pile up about the consequences of all these decisions, nobody ever stops to think, well, you know, maybe we should change some laws here. Was there ever a way that was better than this way? No, we don't look back. We don't look to the side. We just full speed ahead, forward, onward, upward. This is actually progress. We're all getting better and better every way and every day. It's a broad way. But then in contrast here, there's a narrow way. A narrow road, a narrow gate, and a narrow road. And this road has laws. It has 10 signposts. You know what they are. You hear them every Sunday morning. That's restrictive. At least in the world's eyes. It sets limits. It puts guards up on the side of the road and it keeps everyone in lanes. And it looks kind of boring, but actually it's a way, as we'll see, to life. There's not as much carnage on this road. There are tough things on this road, for sure. People tell a lot of jokes about you. They'll mock you. They'll insult you. They'll persecute you. People on the Broadway will be kind of lobbing big bombs over from time to time. They'll be trying to drive their own vehicles into you, knock you off the road, and sometimes they'll just line up the side of the narrow way and just have a good laugh at you all. And it's painful, it's difficult, it's a persecuted way at times, not all the time, but at times. However, as God's people have found throughout the years, although it's a very hard road at times, it's actually true freedom. It's the safest road in the world in that sense. And also, even when it's dangerous, even when there are troubles and when there are obstacles and when there's persecution, there's an inward peace that God gives, a remarkable strength and comfort and compensation. He doesn't promise you an easy way, but he does promise you support and encouragement and strength along that way. He doesn't abandon you. He drives with you. He's in the car with you, as it were. He'll never leave you. He'll never forsake you. That's all you really need. So I'm just trying to be honest, just as Jesus was honest here, this is a narrow gate, this is a narrow road. Don't be under any illusions about this. And then look at the travelers here. We really don't know that much about them. We're simply told this: on the broad way there are many, and on the narrow way there are few. That's about it. We'd like to know more, but that's all we're told. That's all we need to know, probably. Or else we would have been told more. Many and few. And it's understandable, isn't it? I mean, when you're told about the broad gate and the broad way, it's not surprising there are lots of people on it, and you're told about the narrow gate and the narrow way, it's not surprising that there aren't many people on it. But just know for sure you're on one or the other. In some ways, the story of history is people trying to invent a third way. So you'll have a number of people, especially within the church, who say, well, you know, I don't want to be on the Broadway. I know that's bad, that's wrong, that's dangerous. No, that's not for me. But that narrow way, you know, that just looks a bit extreme. It's really, I mean, does it really need to be that narrow? The gate that narrow, the way that narrow? Is there not a middle way? Is there not, okay, these are all the bad people, and these are all the really good people. Is there not something like for miscellaneous or everyone else that is not so like evil and it doesn't kind of need to be quite so holy, but just something in between? That's the dream, isn't it, of so many? Maybe it's your dream. Maybe, in fact, it's your reality. Maybe you're trying to live that out. Maybe that's like at the back or even the front of your mind as you think about these two gates. You don't like that broad gate and you don't like the narrow gate. You don't like the broad way, you don't like the narrow way. So we're just going to find another way. And there isn't one. There isn't. There is no third way. There's no miscellaneous category. There's no and everyone else. It's broad or narrow. It's many or few. It's so clear. You can't, no matter how much you parse these words, no matter how big a magnifying glass you bring to these words, you cannot find anywhere, any angle you look at it, a third gate and a third way, a third kind of traveler. It's just not there. People would long for it to be so, and it's not so. People think, well, you know, I mean, I'm not Osama bin Laden, and I'm not Saddam Hussein, and I'm not Gaddafi, and I'm not Kim Jong-un, and I'm not Harvey Weinstein, and but I'm not, you know, godly either. I'm not that holy, and I mean, surely there's some way in between here. And Jesus says, no. Two kinds of traveler. Only two. And this the clarity of this message is really all through the Bible. It's not something Jesus invented. Let me just show you a few verses just to confirm that. If you look at, for example, Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 26, "Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. A blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, and a curse if you will not obey the commandments of the Lord." A bit further in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 30, verse 15, Moses' words, "See, I have set before you this day life and good, death and evil." Take it a little bit further. Look in the book of Joshua, chapter 24 and verse 15, where Joshua says, "If it seem evil to you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." It's the same in Jeremiah 21:8, 1 Kings 18:21. You come to the New Testament, even in this Sermon on the Mount, you have two trees, not three. You have two houses, not three. You have two foundations, not three. You have two kinds of prophets, not three. Jesus brings this before us a time and again. You're either darkness or light. You're dead or you're alive. You're for him or you're against him. You're with the many or you're with the few. No middle ground. No in between. No gray areas. There's a vast chasm between the two. You cannot stretch your legs from one to the other. You cannot walk a middle way. Two kinds of travelers. You know, there are lots of moral people on the broad way. There are lots of moral people on the broad way. People who live uprightly. They're good neighbors. They're people who are sacrificial in serving their communities, even in serving the church. But they're still in the broad way because they haven't gone through the narrow gate. Their pride will not allow them to put even their good works to the side and leave even their righteousness behind. No, they're living on their righteousness, through their righteousness, by their righteousness, and you can't get in the narrow gate, not with unrighteousness or righteousness, not with immorality or morality. You've got to leave the bad and the good behind. And that takes a ton of humility. But let's look, fourthly, at the two destinations. Again, Jesus is extremely clear here. Two gates, two roads, two travelers, two destinations. We read about the broad way, that it leads to destruction. It was really easy to get into. It was really easy to travel on. It was really easy to travel together with so many people. But the destination is destruction. destruction. Imagine if you know, sometimes you see the buses going around Grand Rapids and it's got Knapp's Corner or whatever on it. Imagine if you saw a bus and it said in the front of it, destruction. Do you think anyone would get on that bus? Well, I mean, you'd be mad, wouldn't you? You'd look at anyone on that bus and think, are they crazy? Oh, but they're having a great party. And they're actually, look, there's lots of people on it. They must be having a great time. And they're all laughing. They're all happy. And, you know, things seem to be going really well. Yes, but they're going to destruction. You don't travel for the sake of the journey, do you? You travel with a view to a destination. You don't stop anyone in the highway and say, where are you going? I don't know, I just love driving. No, they're going somewhere. They have a destination. They have an aim. And yet so many in this life have no sense of destination, no sense of end point. It's just one big, long journey, and we're just having a great old time. Do you not see, as Jesus tells us, the end is destruction. And it's a special kind of destruction, an awful kind of destruction. As we read elsewhere in Jesus' words, it's an everlasting destruction. You can get that bus, and you can put it in a grinder, in a wrecker's yard, and you could destroy that in probably 10, 15 seconds, some of these machines. And it's over. It's done. It's finished. This is everlasting destruction. This isn't a destruction that comes to an end in a second or in a minute or in an hour or in a year or in a decade or in a century or in a millennia. It's everlasting destruction. Again, try and say that to yourself. If you're going through that broad gate, if you're on that broad way, if you're with the many, however good it feels and however popular it feels, everlasting destruction is where you're going. What about this journey will make that worthwhile? It won't take you like a year of everlasting destruction to come to the conclusion, I've made a big mistake. You'll come to that decision in the first second that you're there. The enormity of this punishment, this divine wrath, is such that the moment you open your eyes there, the irreversibility, the enormity, the eternity. I'm guessing that the first thing people do when they get to hell is turn around and see, can I go back out? And there's no gate, there's no door. There's no way out. You will never find that door. Contrast that with this. Everlasting life. Everlasting life. Yes, it was a tough gate to go through. You had to leave a lot behind. Yes, it was a tough road to travel, especially because it was so lonely at times. But you will not be 1 second in heaven before you come to the conclusion, wow, was that worth it? Was that worth it? Such will be the life. Such will be the reward, such will be the blessing of God. That all the difficulties of the gate, all the difficulties of the way, all the difficulties of being so lonely and isolated will be forgotten and gone. And life everlasting is in front of you. Again, there's no third venue here. There's not an in-between place. There's not sort of a place for the really good and the really evil and the in-betweeners. It's not there. It's just not there. There are the ones who have given up all for Christ, and there are those who gave up Christ for everything else. That's it. This is compassionate clarity. It might not feel compassionate, but let me persuade you that it is, because this is about the most vital truths in the world, in the universe. This is, I mean, we never want to tell a lie, but sometimes we want to hold back the truth or not tell the whole truth. You might have a friend, family member comes to you and they're wearing something and it doesn't look good, but you're not going to tell them the truth. You let these things pass. It's not that important. Somebody maybe makes a statement and like you realize, well, that's wrong, but well, you know, what's the point? It's not a trivial thing. It's really don't need to deal with it. But this is vital truth. It's central. It's essential. There's nothing more important in all the universe than this truth. It's about salvation or condemnation, heaven or hell, everlasting life or everlasting destruction, true biblical conversion or false conversion and no conversion at all. That's why this clarity is compassionate, because it's about the biggest, most important, most relevant, most influential, most consequential truths you will ever be confronted with in your life. It's compassionate because it's provocative truth. It's provocative in two ways. First of all, in that it stirs up an adverse reaction. You know, the worst possible state to be in is a state of apathy. That kind of, you come to church and you just let religious truth wash over you, and you kind of develop this ability to either, you know, just runs off you as water off a duck's back, or it washes over you and you kind of get through it and you go on, and it's just kind of vanilla flavor and it's just blah and it's nothing and it doesn't affect you and it's really all very mundane and routine, and you go from week to week. That's the worst possible state to be in, of apathy, non-reaction. This kind of clarity provokes an adverse reaction. If there's not somebody here tonight that's absolutely furious, I'll be very surprised. And that's good. I want you to be angry. It's far better to have that than nothing. I want you to feel the force and the clarity and the power of these words, even if you hate me as a result. That's irrelevant. Because at least it gets you thinking. At least it stirs up some spiritual thoughts. At least it awakens you. At least it stirs up some emotion or some intensity. At least it might linger with you for more than a minute after the service. So it's compassionate because it's provocative truth. And also in a second way, in that I hope another reaction, if not of those who overreact in a bad way, that eventually they too will come to this: I must act myself. I've got something to do. I'm in a bad way here. I thought I was safe. I was maybe not crystal clear saying it, but yeah, I kind of thought there was a middle gate and a middle way and a middle set of travelers and a middle destination. And now I realize there are only two, and I know I'm not in that one. I need to flee to that one and from that one. So I hope that Christ's compassionate clarity will provoke reaction and action. That you'll be like that desperate traveler outside the city gates, searching for all your life, with all your life, for this gate. Where is it? Where can I find it? And when you get it, that you run to it, and that you knock and knock and knock and knock until somebody opens it. And that you go with these promises as given to you, even just before these words, listen to them. What Jesus says here, everyone that asks receives. He that seeks finds. To him that knocks it shall be opened. Therefore, ask and it will be given you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened. And just one last word I want to leave with you. And it's the first word. Enter. Enter. It's just really simple, that, isn't it? It's not enough, okay, now I know where the gate is. And now I can actually describe the gate, admire the gate, even speak about the gate. No, it's enter the gate. Enter the gate. Don't walk away from it again. Enter it. How do you... I was thinking this afternoon as I was preparing this. How do you think Jesus said that word, enter? How do you think he said it? Try and think about that. Knowing his compassionate clarity, these other verses, I can't help but hear his voice loud, his voice commanding, his voice pleading, his voice trembling, his voice loving. I cannot imagine a simple enter. I hear a Savior with all his might and all his heart, all his soul and all his strength, reaching out to the lost in front of him and saying with all the compassion and clarity he can muster, enter, enter, enter. Can you hear him? Can you resist him? Let's pray.